This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. In our last episode, Ruby and Edie found temporary lodgings in a rundown boarding house after she posed as a war widow to overcome the manager's prejudice against unmarried mothers. We left her reflecting on her circumstances and the uncertain future ahead.
The door of number 9 did not open easily. The tiny room smelled damp. At least it was tidy. There was little space for moving around, with a nightstand on one side of the single bed, a worn-looking chair in a corner, and a wardrobe with drawers. The wallpaper was rippled and bulged, making the walls seem oddly insubstantial.
"One bed!" cried Edie. "Where am I going to sleep?"
"Didn't you hear what that lady said? We have to bunk in." Ruby looked at the sagging mattress. Why hadn't someone re-stretched the bed wires? Perhaps it had reached its limit.
"We won't fit," said Edie.
"It's not so bad. At least we'll be snug." Ruby turned back the faded bedspread, inspecting each of the two blankets and the sheets. She lifted the thin mattress.
"What are you doing that for?" said Edie.
"Making sure there are no bugs or fleas."
"Ooh, I hate fleas. Remember that time poor Faye had to mop the floor with stinky kerosene? There aren't any fleas here, are there?"
"Let's hope we didn't bring one with us." Ruby winked at Edie and took a last look at the foot of the bed. "Don't seem to be any." Although the pillowcase was likely to have been boiled clean, the repellent smell of rancid sweat had impregnated the pillow inside it. Edie opened a drawer.
"Look, somebody's things are in here."
"Shut that and mind your own business." Ruby hung her coat behind the door and used the palm of her hand to brush grubby flecks off the coarse wool. It wasn't her coat. That shade of taupe didn't suit her, and the collar itched. She grabbed it when they left. It was an ugly old thing, heavy but serviceable. The bulky volume of it hid the contours of her body, and she felt safe inside it. On the train, it had kept them both warm enough. She regretted having to leave behind her smart blue coat, which fitted at the waist, flared from the hip, and swung as she walked. It was almost new, but leaving it behind had been deliberate. Angel had pointed out that as long as her good coat was left there, they might not realize she was gone. It would buy her time to get away. Who'd be wearing it next?
"Someone's knocking on our door," said Edie.
The gentle rap was repeated. Ruby held her breath, alert, listening. Edie made a move towards the door.
"Stay there," Ruby ordered, leaning against the door.
"Who is it?"
Mrs. Barton? It's Woods. Mr. Woods.
Ruby exhaled. The uncertain tone of his voice touched her. She turned the key and pulled the door open just enough to see that he'd politely stepped away from it, and he held up a neatly rolled towel.
"Yes?"
She didn't want to be polite.
"I don't mean to intrude. Forgive me, but I..."
He stepped forward, holding the towel up.
"I hope you don't mind. I heard you ask."
Getting mixed up with anyone was the last thing she needed.
She kept her face tight, even though his earnest, slightly bashful expression, which made the corners of her mouth twitch. Anyone as harmless-looking as that was bound to have something to hide.
I thought you may...
He lifted the towel toward her. No, we'll manage, thank you. She moved the door a fraction, as if to close it. Edie wriggled in beside her.
Oh, it's Mr. Woods. Hello.
Edie, get back and mind your own business, Ruby hissed. There was a smudge of dirt on the back of Edie's neck. It would be good to have a bath. Getting back into their clothes with wet bodies had no appeal.
Please, take it, he urged.
Won't you need it? She said, without opening the door further.
Don't worry about me, he said. I have another one. I always have two towels. I'd be happy to lend you that as well, but I might...
His eyes were the colour of cornflowers. Ruby opened the door just wide enough to take the towel from him. I'm not inviting you in.
Oh God, no. Oh dear. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
Thanks. I'll return it as soon as I...
There's no hurry, he said.
Thank you, Mr. Woods. Ruby closed the door before he said anything else. She listened to his footsteps receding and mentally counted to 20. All she heard was the low burble of people talking on the ground floor. Someone creaked down the stairs. Opening the door, she peered into the corridor, not wanting to encounter anyone, especially Mr. Woods.
Come on, Ruby said.
Let's go to the toilet first, then we'll see if the bathroom's free for a quick wash before we go down to dinner. In the tarnished bathroom mirror, her reflection was blurred, as though part of her had been erased. A cracked sliver of carbolic soap sat on the hand basin. Using a corner of Mr. Wood's towel as a flannel, she scrubbed her face with hot water until her skin was red. Edie entertained herself turning the cold tap on and off. On, off.
Cut it out, Ruby said.
But it squeaks. The tap in our old bathroom didn't squeak. That one just made a groany noise before the water came out, like it didn't want to.
Edie, listen to me.
Ruby took her daughter's face in her hands.
It's important. I do not want you talking to men you don't know.
What are you saying that for? We don't know anyone here at all, said Edie. What if I have to do your messages and there's a man in the shop?
Ruby scrubbed smut off Edie's neck with a damp corner of the towel.
Don't argue with me, you know what I mean, and use that soap on your hands for goodness sake.
A tap, tap, tap on the frosted glass panel of the door interrupted them.
Someone else wants a wash before tea, Ruby said.
As they left the bathroom, Ruby hurried Edie past an elderly man with a towel over his shoulder, who bid them an uninterested
evening.
For the past 5 years, they had shared a dilapidated, two-storied place with other women, who had dubbed the place Rat's Nest for good reason. The old weatherboard house and the matching one next to it was not likely to have seen better days in the rotting part of Lower Freeman's Bay. When the original owners sold up, they'd either cashed in their lot or moved to one of the more salubrious slopes of Auckland. The one bathroom at Rat's Nest was shared with six other women and occasional nameless girls who came and went. At first, little Edie had found it hard to get used to being washed in the kitchen, where hands and faces, sometimes underwear, were washed in the same sink as dishes and saucepans. She got used to ignoring women washing their naked top halves in the kitchen, their brassieres dangling at their waists. The girls of the house had vied for private time in the bathroom. Squabbles and occasional fights broke out over who'd taken someone's stockings that had been left hanging over the bath's curtain rail, whose unmentionables were left in the hand basin, and who'd left a ring of soap scum around the bath. Together, Ruby and Edie had the bathroom for 20 minutes at 6:30 each night, before Edie was put into bed. before Ruby went out to work. Those days were over, and the future looked foggy. Back in number 9, Ruby closed the door and whispered in Edie's ear, "I wish one day we could have a house with a bathroom all to ourselves." "Me too," said Edie, nodding gravely. If it weren't for Edie, Ruby would have flopped down to sleep. She didn't want to go to the dining room, or be bothered seeing anyone or having to make an effort to be polite. It was hard to know what kind of people would be there. There could be a bunch of oddballs from God knows where. And what about that Mr. Woods? What's his game? Lending them a towel? Still, she was glad of it. Would he be there, dining with the hoi polloi, or had he ducked out to some restaurant or the pub? After a whole day in the carriage, the back of her hair was probably frizzy and matted. There was no time to snag the comb in it, so she ran her fingers through it and pinned it back behind her ears, wishing she had brought one pair of earrings, or at least a string of beads to make her feel done up. It hit her then. What she was wearing was all she had. The gathered cotton skirt and blouse she had on were nowhere near warm enough, even with the silk slip she'd made underneath. It was early May, and already cold in this town. The scratchy coat would have to serve as a dressing gown too. Ruby sat on the edge of the bed, elbows on her knees, her head in her hands. She felt Edie's arm on her shoulders.
"It's all right, Mum," Edie said.
The little voice was hardly heard. Ruby was thinking about the things she'd left behind, wishing she'd bought her Yardley soap. She pictured the room they'd shared with Angel. Behind a curtain of bright fabric sent from Angel's family in the Cook Islands, the makeshift wardrobe had been filled with frocks. Ruby's sophisticated evening gowns hung on another rack, so they didn't get crushed. Her dressing gown had been left behind the door. Their underwear had been left folded in the chest of drawers she'd shared with Edie. Once the others realized she and Edie had gone, everything she had owned would be haggled over, along with her wristwatch. They'd fight over her rabbit fur jacket, which had been a gift from a nice man whose name she didn't remember. Edie's clothes would fetch good money too. Mo Hanrahan would already have her bullies out searching the city for them. Ruby had to count on Angel keeping Mum. People always underestimated Angel. In turn, she happily exploited their bigoted ignorance by acting the happy-go-lucky dummy when she needed to. She laughed at them for it. Thinking about Angel, Ruby's skin remembered the luscious warmth of her. An unwelcome shiver dispelled her thoughts. Someone stepped on your grave. Isn't that what people said when that happened? Edie had slung her coat over the chair and sat hunched against the cold in her thin frock and striped cardigan, knitted out of scraps of coloured wool and unpicked second-hand jumpers. Ruby chewed her lip, glumly, aware of Edie watching her. She turned away, not wanting Edie to see that she had no idea what to do next. Aside from the clothes they wore, all they had was in her purse. Edie's socks were grubby, and they had no spare underwear. Another pair of nylons would be useful, and because she'd stupidly left her comfortable day shoes in the bottom of the wardrobe, she'd now have to ask that Mrs. Thompson for a sticking plaster. Damn. She leaned over and gave Edie's head a kiss. "Buck up, sourpuss. We'll be all right, won't we?" It was said without conviction. "We'd better get ready for dinner, I suppose, or we'll miss out." Holding up her compact, Ruby looked into the little mirror. For a fleeting moment, the face looking back at her was that of the terrified young woman she'd once been, a girl about to splinter into pieces. She snapped the compact shut. The strain of sleeplessness over the last few days had all taken a toll on her nerves. The notion that it showed horrified her. When she flipped the compact open again, she still looked dreadful, but the woman who stared evenly back at her was the woman she'd become. The one who knew how to put a brave face on things. She raked the powder puff through the Helena Rubinstein powder and dabbed at the shine on her nose and dusted over her freckles. The lightest of masks. Half presentable, at least. She should have brought her rouge. Edie was still watching her. Remember when we lived at Auntie Hilda and Barry's place in Sandringham? Ruby addressed Edie's reflection in the mirror. Before we lived in Freeman's Bay?
She was mean.
You probably don't remember her properly. Hilda's your only real aunt. She bought you some lovely clothes.
You gave them away.
Only after you grew out of them. Besides, I had to sell them to pay for other things.
Stop interrupting. I'm trying to tell you something important.
Ruby paused to put lipstick on her forefinger and lightly daubed the colour on her lips.
Why aren't you putting that lipstick on properly?
Asked Edie. I don't want to look tarty. Ruby gave the dark rings under her eyes another dab of powder and shut the compact.
Just listen. Do you remember all those rules at Auntie Hilda's place?
She whacked me with a wooden spoon.
You probably deserved it.
Auntie Mo's place was a lot more fun.
Ruby turned Edie to face her. Here's a rule of my own, for a start. I don't want you to ever mention that woman's name again. Edie sucked her bottom lip.
And don't make that ridiculous face. I despair, Ruby said. Children aren't even meant to stay here, so you'd better keep out of everyone's way. No eavesdropping or snooping around the place. People take exception to a child nosing in where she doesn't belong.
I'll be good, said Edie.
You'd better. If you don't behave, you'll have us thrown out, that's what.
Okay.
Try not to say okay, said Ruby. And never talk about...
Mum, you've already told me all that, I know.
Edie rolled her eyes.
Table manners, no elbows, pleases and thank yous, and never ever talk about other people's business, and never talk about our business either. Just like the rules at home.
That place wasn't home. It was just a place where we used to live. That's over. And I swear we're never going back.
Ruby saw uncertainty, trust, and more uncertainty pass behind her daughter's eyes. She gave Edie's cheek a playful tweak. From now on, my chicken, if anyone asks where we're from, just say Auckland. When I was a kid, the rule was children were seen and not heard. There's never been a better time for it. Mr. Woods leaned against the painted newel post at the foot of the stairs. A stray lock had fallen over his forehead. He really was quite good looking. Now she looked at him again.
Mrs. Barton, he said. I was hoping to catch you.
Were you? Ruby did her best to appear diffident by looking in the direction of a faded constable print on the opposite wall. The gold-painted papier-mâché frame was flaking.
Yes, I just thought I'd say... Dinner here is rather a humble affair. Usually someone brings around a trolley and you get whatever they've cooked. Sometimes it's a bit odds and sods.
He paused at the approach of a battered trolley, laden with two tall aluminium pots and a tower of sliced, buttered bread on top of a pile of plates, being pushed by a dumpy little woman in an apron.
Odds and sods, Mr. Wood, the woman chuckled. Oh, a naughty boy like you doesn't deserve any dinner at all.
It's always excellent, Pim, dear. Hearty stuff, he called after her.
Edie's nose was already leading her into the dining room, following the trolley.
I think we're in luck tonight, Mr. Woods said. Smells like some sort of stew. That means there'll be mash.
Thanks.
Oh, by the way,
he paused to look behind them, then up and down the passage.
I know there are a couple of vacant rooms.
Ruby gave him a side glance. He shrugged.
Mrs. T does have a soft side, he said. You'd do well to find it.
Silly boy. She'd known women like that.
Didn't he know any soft side the old crone had was just for him?
Thanks, she said again.
I'd better go in and get some dinner.
I wonder... His voice came from behind her.
Following Edie, Ruby pretended not to hear him. What he was going to say was obvious. He was going to invite himself to their table, wasn't he? It was a bore. A damn cheek, too. Letting them use a towel didn't mean he had the right to get familiar. Still, it would be one friendly face.
The dining room was cluttered with mismatched chairs around an assortment of tables. Sliding doors opened up to the lounge she'd seen earlier. The few diners were smoking and chatting while they waited for the lids to come off the pots. After estimating the size of Arcadia House and adding up the number of diners sitting at tables, Ruby calculated that unless just as many people were still in the lounge, what Mr. Woods said about spare rooms looked likely. There was no sign of the yellow-mopped Mrs. Thompson. Edie ran to park herself at one of the spare tables. Some of the residents parked their cigarettes on the edges of trays and made their way to Pim's trolley. Ruby saw how things ran. She tapped Pim on the sleeve of her pink cardigan and smiled.
Can I help with anything?
Put the bread out if you like, love, Pim said,
sparing Ruby a glance as she ladled grey-looking stew and dollops of mashed potato onto cold plates. A few residents wandered toward the food.
You can sit yourselves down, she announced,
handing Ruby two full plates.
This lady's going to be serving tonight.
Served? It's not even my birthday, said a man with one arm.
A hubbub of comments and laughter broke out.
Look to your wee one first, said Pim, smiling this time.
Edie had her fork ready and crumbs of bread were on her lips.
Please, can I start?
Ruby nodded. Go on.
Across the room, Mr. Woods leaned on the mantelpiece with his cigarette, watching. The odd man out. What was he doing here, in a place like Arcadia?
Your lassie's got an appetite, hasn't she? Said Pim.
Ruby frowned. And manners seemed to go out the window, I'm afraid. Pim clucked.
She's got enough time to be ladylike.
What's the story with Mr. Woods? Said Ruby.
He's a worry, that's what he is.
Pim rolled her eyes. She raised her voice.
Where are you putting yourself tonight, Mr. Woods?
He stubbed his cigarette out in a plate-sized power shell and looked around the room. Would you like to join us, Mr. Woods? Ruby said, as she took plates of food and sat next to Edie. She could hardly believe she'd said it. Still, it was the least she could do, after the towel. She wasn't flirting. It would just be nice to have a friendly face to talk to. That was all. Pim's cackle echoed down the passage as she took the squeaking trolley back to the kitchen.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.